When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Welcome to the ThinkSpace podcast with myself, John Staskowski and Danny Massaro, where we discuss human nature and the practical application of philosophy. To find out more about our cohort course and membership community, please head over to www.thinkspace.academy. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Right, Danny, we're back in the saddle.
We are.
We've not done one of these for a while, have we? So I'm having to relearn how to do the bloody recording thing and that. Right, today we are going to be looking at the inferiority complex. And alongside that, well, the one and the same, and the inferiority and superiority complex, which is essentially the work of Alfred Adler, who was an Austrian medical doctor, psychotherapist, founded the School of Individual Psychology, born in 1870, died 1937, and really quite a prominent name in psychology generally, really, was part of the Vienna Circle with people like Sigmund Freud until had a bit of a falling out when their ideas diverged, but essentially built his own school of psychotherapy. And one of his key theories that he believed drives human behavior essentially was this inferiority complex, which we're going to explore in a little bit of detail. So in terms of a quick definition, just to kick us off, and then I'll let you dive in, Danny, with your sort of initial perceptions. Essentially what we're talking about, so the inferiority complex is an intense personal feeling of inadequacy, often resulting in the belief that one is in some way deficient or inferior to others. And like we said, Adler was like, this is one of the main big drivers that's just built into human beings, this feeling of inferiority, and it just drives how we then approach life. So it's one of those where we thought it's just an interesting one to have a chat about, lots of application in different spheres of life, not least in sport and education and our sort of world, and just one that I think people might resonate with and take some applications away from to then look at how they live their life. So, Danny, what do you reckon? How do you want to kick off?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. A lot of this comes from a book that was popular and brought out, I think, you know, definitely 2014 or something, the Courage to be Disliked. And then there was a follow-up, The Courage to be Happy. And it was all based on Adler's theories of what makes people tick, really, and personality development. The inferiority complex was one of his main ideas. And then he goes on to superiority complex as well, which we'll talk about. I like that kind of contrast. And that one of the reasons for that is that to be normal, just to be normal and to fit in, particularly nowadays, isn't very like accepted. It's like, you know, just to be one of the pack, his claim was that you were wanting in some way to stand out and get noticed, particularly if in your life you'd felt that you'd been evaluated by others in a lowly way. And we'll all feel that in some form or another, but he linked that a lot to if you've been brought up in a family or you've been brought up in a place where you were kind of always put down, or you were second, or you were the younger sibling, or, you know, whatever. And he sort of said that everyone has certain flaws that have an impact on how they build the personalities. That doesn't mean that a negative flaw makes you become a negative person. So feeling inferior could ultimately make you turn out to be positive. So when you're younger and you want to beat your big brother or something, or, you know, someone told you'd never make it as something, a lot of people say, well, that's what drove me on. Whereas the same situation with someone else, they can go, I never made it because you told me I couldn't make it. And therefore, all their life, they feel a bit inferior, and it has a negative, pragmatic negative effect, rather than that inferiority drives me to be better. So Adler wasn't saying about that an inferiority complex is necessarily a bad thing. He was just saying it's something that drives human behavior in the same way a superiority complex does, which we'll get into in a bit. But one of the things that sort of sticks with me about it is he wrote that faulty evaluation is at the root of all mental disease. And what he means by that is he sort of was saying when you're not feeling well, or you go wonky, or you start to go off it and so on. His theory, remember, it is only a theory, was the faulty evaluation of yourself, the way you looked at yourself, the way you interpreted what had happened to you. And if you interpreted it faultily and, you know, then therefore overblew it, such as you might always believe that you were picked on, or you didn't have a great childhood and so on, which could be true. But there are versions, there are elements of how much you take that to heart. You know, there are elements of how much you feel like you were a victim or you were persecuted. And that's like everybody's individual choice. So you kind of get into this individualism that Viktor Frankl talked about as well, this individual psychology that started to lead on to things such as Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, started to link into the self-help movement, the neuro-linguistic programming movement about your past does not have to equal your future. So it started to be a lot about it's how you individually perceive what has happened in your past what counts, not actually what's happened in your past. So you always can change, and you know, like I say, your past does not have to equal your future. Now, that runs in complete opposition to Freud, a Freudian view of it, where no, your past directly affects who you are because it's always working in the subconscious. And unless you go back and rearrange what happened in your past and would deal with those issues and address them, you will never move on. You will always have issues from your childhood or the way you were treated in the past, you know, trauma and all these hidden instinctive things. Whereas Adler got onto this thing a bit more individualistic and rational and cold in a way, whereas no, if you can reprogram your thoughts, your future can be anything. So that's a bit of a overview there.
It was definitely about the response, wasn't it? So it's like everyone's got these different inferiorities, just naturally we've all got them because we're social beings, and you know, we're seeing the world around, we're going to feel this little bit of a sense of inferiority. But it was definitely about how you then respond to that, which, like you say, Freud, and that's where they did start out as colleagues. They were quite close colleagues, and there was a crew of them kicking around in Vienna where they were, I think they used to call it like the Wednesday Club or something like that, where they'd meet up and they'd take turns to present an idea, and then they'd have like coffee and cake and then discuss it and like throw out their objections or just discussing it, really. Which I quite like that vibe of like that community of practice type stuff, isn't it? But you're right, when Adler then went off on a tangent and he was actually, no, it's more about how you react and respond, that's when him and Freud started to fall out, diverge in their opinions. But I suppose in terms of that response, he framed it as there's like 3 responses that you can do. So he talked about compensation. So when you realise that you've got a particular, or you're feeling inferior in a particular way, we start to compensate for it. So this is where we try and make up for any area of like underdevelopment, or you know, whether that's physical, mental, whatever. Usually just through trying to like self-improvement, self-help, like you talked about. So just like taking an interest in something and maybe training in something, practicing in something to try and get better and reduce that inferiority. And that's what you call compensation. The middle one you call resignation. So that's where you just kind of throw your hands up. And I think he sort of thought this is what most people tend to end up doing in a way, like the majority of people. Yeah. It's just like you just sort of give in to that disadvantage that you've got, or that inferiority that you've got. Yeah. And just reconcile yourself with it. So if I'm 5'2" and everyone else around me is 6', you kind of just have to reconcile with yourself that, well, I'm just shorter than people. There's not a lot I can do about it. And, you know, on you go. And the third one he talked about was overcompensation. So this is where people respond to that inferiority by going too far. So this is where you go, like, you go above and beyond to try and, like, get above that inferiority that you've got and sort of, like, go that extra mile, which, like, we'll talk about, I think, when we get to superiority, you know, it ends up being, like, attention seeking, like being dead flashy, maybe being like extra competitive and aggressive and all those sorts of traits that he called, that's like you're overcompensating that for the inferiority that you've got. So I quite like that, that it's like, it's all about the response and it's in your gift to do what you can. You're not just like subject to it, like Freud was saying. But I think he was right as well, so that can get out of hand a little bit sometimes, where you go too far to bridge those gaps.
Yeah, I think, this let's remember, this is literally a theory. And what is a theory? I suppose what we're learning as we go through all these podcasts, all these different ones, it's just like a scaffolding, isn't it, of understanding that we often actually retrofit our experiences to it. So we've just said that and you can go, oh yeah, that's how I feel about that. And you sort of fill in the gaps of this structure that they've laid out. But it helps you make sense of things. And I think it's so obvious now in modern day talk that, you know, self-improvement and individualistic striving and, you know, if you come on this course, you can become clever. And if you eat this food, you can become fitter. And if you go for this kind of therapy, you can get rid of all your problems. And if you come on this course, you can build confidence. Just the basic premise that you can change your future is so everywhere now with products and cars and everything, isn't it? You know, but we just like, that's always been there in history. It's like you can control really what happens to you in so many ways. It, you know, your personality development is really down to you. And I know that fitted me as a personally, you know, So when you talked about the resignation part, we all have things that go on to us in our childhood and, you know, good luck, bad luck, you know, you meet partners and your parents might get divorced and friends might leave you and some people might die and you have bad things and good things, opportunities are lost, some things go well, some things go bad. And I think one of the ideas that I got from, and when I studied neuro-linguistic programming, why I liked it a bit was that if you're not careful, all the sort of bad things that happen to you, you can hold on to them for the secondary gain of, well, what could I do about it? That happened. So what, it's like a get out of jail card in Monopoly. You can always have it in your pocket to play. It's like, well, how was I supposed to ever be, you know, get a degree? Because I was sent to a school and had no books. Or, well, how was I supposed to do well? My mum and dad got divorced at such an age. And what do you expect? Or, now, you know, we've talked about this before, haven't we? This facticity and transcendence. You know, if, like you say, if you're 5'2", it's very unlikely you're going to be the best high jumper who's ever lived. You know, so there are limits and there are facts about your situation that you can never overcome. But this is this was the fat start of a very like positive kind of get a grip of yourself. Reframe the way you look at things. If you're in sport, for example, and you've had an injury, that injury will make you better if you look at it the right way, right? That because you'll come back fitter, you'll come back stronger, you'll appreciate the game. And it's always like, you've got to frame it as, well, if that injury never would have happened to me, these other four or five, six things wouldn't have happened. So it's always like you put yourself on the positive side of fate. And it's a very nice, soothing thought that you can always move on and fix your situation if you're that kind of person. But it's a horrible thought if you're not that kind of person, you know, and you may be low on energy or you're not someone who's really confident or into self-improvement or that's not your personality style. So you might like having a chip on your shoulder. You might be comfortable living a slower life or there might be, like Freud says, just childhood issues and traumas that you just literally cannot get past no matter how hard you try. So Adler would say, well, if you'd gone through trauma in war, it's like, well, in a few years, you'll think about it differently and you'll be fine. And then you'll become like, you'll run a trauma center and help other people and you'll turn that tragedy into something noble. Well, that might work for a few people, but not all people. This is where these theories, for me, they're interesting, but they're not necessarily one size fits all. So that's how I see it. If you're into sort of positive self-improvement and no excuses and, you know, being self-driven, I think I can understand where this fits into Adler's theory.
It is like, it is a theory though. We were saying before we started recording, weren't we? We were talking about the fact that all of these people that we talk about really on all the episodes we've done, none of it's rarely sort of backed up with science and research and all that stuff. It tends to just be theories that people have that then get taken on into the culture and lived three times. So people like Freud, and you know, just like the man on the street knows who Freud is usually, and like has an awareness of it. Just one guy who had some ideas that are projected through time. And you can see, so I was doing a little bit of digging back into Adler's past. So when he's, one of his initial theories was this whole inferiority complex. And you can see where it's come from. So his, when Adler was three, his younger brother died in the bed next to him. And then throughout the rest of his childhood, he had this sort of intense rivalry with his older brother. And that was sort of grounded in this belief he had that his mother preferred his brother over him. So you can see where that's sort of ruminating within him, and he's, you know, that's part of him growing up. Later on, he developed rickets, which kept him from walking until he was four, I think. And then he gets, when he turns four, he ends up getting pneumonia. And he actually hears, which sounds pretty brutal, actually, hears a doctor saying to his dad at the time, "Your boy's lost." He like distinctly remembers that. He gets run over twice. And so you've got that, it's like he's been run over twice. He's got this thing of his, like, he's overheard the doctor saying, like, basically he's done for. He's got all this sickness that's contributed to. He's got a bit of a fear of death going on, and that's in the mix as well. The thing with his brother dying when he was younger. So you've got, you can imagine how this is all in play but in his childhood that then leads to him having a particular outlook on just human psychology generally, which he then theorizes on and comes up with ideas. So it's and it's not to belittle that, but it is just one guy's experience that he's then sort of theorized into a thing, which again it resonates with people, doesn't it? So like when we're, it's like, yeah, you can see that, I see, oh yeah, that's when I did that, and when I felt like this, that must have been in play. And it's, so they are relevant, but it is, I think it's a good reminder to think that, yeah, these are still just theories and ideas that concepts that people have come up with.
Well, I think that's a bigger point, really, isn't it? Interesting that I read The Courage to be Disliked. I was actually told to read it by a sports coach called Frank Dick, a Scotland coach, a really successful in athletics and things. And he said, "Oh, I really like this Adler's thing." And now Frank himself's a sports coach, very hard, very kind of, you know, lovely man, very helpful, but very pragmatic, very, you know, you've got to change your attitude and the world will open up. And you can, I could see in me, the way I am, the way he is, the way, you know, the way certain people are, these positive theories like this. You know, I didn't read Adler and do and learn about neuro-linguistic programming and all these, and Stephen Covey's habits and Tony Robbins and all these selfie. I was like that anyway. And then I jumped onto these things and I thought, that's just like me. And then it gave me like a fuel boost and a structure to sort of make a bit more sense of me. The mistake then is to go around battering everybody with that and saying, you just need to be like me and you need to do these seven habits. You know, so for example, I'm sure Adler loved the 12 steps program for Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's about, isn't it? It's about, you have been an alcoholic. You want to be now better because you don't want to be one. So we can change that through all these, the 12 steps of reframing and working with other people and relationships and moving on and actions. So it's a very sort of move on, action oriented improvement. But there'll be lots of people who've tried Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps and it just doesn't work for them, you know, and they need a different kind of therapy and a different kind of, or being left alone, or they just need to find it in their own way, or what have you. So that's something that Adler doesn't kind of admit, and it's the same in these in the Courage to be Disliked and the Courage to be Happy. Very, very forceful. I mean, they are quite good books because they're done in a Socratic dialogue style between a sort of master and a kid learning it. So you do learn some fascinating ideas, but they never really admit that it's partially true. They just almost, in these books, they almost hit you with, this is the way to be. You know, the Adlerian way of psychology is the way for all humans all the time. If you all followed these things and understand things, you'd be fine. Now, saying that, I don't want to criticize him too much because he's, you know, he's just saying that.
Well, the thing that you maybe think about there, like you just described, so when you read, say, that Courage to be Disliked, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's me, and then you grab onto it. That's what a lot of these philosophers and everyone through time have been doing. So I know Adler was quite into Nietzsche, and he's really influenced by Nietzsche, who we've covered on in an episode on the will to power. So the will to power, one of Nietzsche's main philosophies really, is really sort of built into Adler's work. So he's done the same. He must have read some Nietzsche back in the day and had that same buzz where it's gone, yeah, this is like me, this I kind of into this. And then they just take it on a step, don't they?
and phenomenology. He was into phenomenology a bit, which is basically, these are the steps. You fill it in with your details. As long as you follow, as long as you believe in the things of, like one of the things he says, but most problems you have in life are interpersonal problems. Hence his inferiority, superior complex. So you need, it's about other people. So that was like Heidegger's Das Man, Heidegger's they, that we're beings that are always aware of other people around us. And those be others are always sort of affecting us. But that might not be so true for the strong introverted type, but definitely for the social type person and the extroverted type of personalities. Of course, you're then going to be involved with the inferiority, superiority dynamic, because your whole being is about other people and relationships. So again, you know, that's where, if that is your area, then you are like that, then these things do make sense, because you can spend a lot of your life people-pleasing if you're into relationships and worrying that relationships might not work out and all these things. He was sort of like, the last thing you want to be doing is people-pleasing. What you want to be doing is contributing to others first. And it's the it's the feeling of contribution to other people, which is your Simone de Beauvoir type angle, isn't it, at the end. It's the feeling of how you contribute socially to others, what ultimately is what lets you escape the inferiority, superiority dynamic, because you are then just happy to be contented and useful without wanting to be above or fearing being below others. So you've gone past the sort of game, really, of trying to prove yourself, you know, because you've been inferior and you're trying to prove yourself you're not inferior. You've exited the game of being inferior and playing the inferiority poor me card and the victim. You have got to a point where superiority is fine, but it's, you know, but you don't really need to keep being superior to people. In other words, you know, keeping the status game too high, you know, putting people down, you know, getting more and more money, more whatever, more success. You're sort of like, well, I'm okay with that. So I really kind of like it how he said one of the things is you want the courage to be normal, the courage to be sort of just a normal person in a way, which then it was like, that's freedom from trying to be from the inferiority, superiority thing. And I think that rings true. You know, we've talked about that when you get to a certain stage in life, and you might, particularly maybe in the second curve of your life, the sort of, once you've played the climbing games and you've got what you want, maybe then it's time to see through all that striving and putting people down and playing all those things, you know, doing all those hyper-competitive subtle things we do, and just relaxing a little bit and going more into, now it's my time to genuinely contribute to other people. And therefore, one of the advice he gave was that you don't always have to praise people. Rather than praising people for what they do all the time, you might thank them. It's a bit more of an equal thing. So rather than say, oh, you're amazing, you're this, you're that, you're kind of like, you know, I think you're this, I think you're that. Whereas if you just say, oh, thank you for being such a good musician, it's made my life great. Thank you for being such a good friend and thinking of me, you know, it means a lot. It's less like, oh, you're amazing because you always ring me up and say how you're doing, or you're amazing, you're a great musician and you always release good music. When you just say that, you're immediately bringing in a hierarchy, like where are we in relation to each other? But when you just sometimes, this was his proposal, when you just thank people, you know, you're not setting them up for like that. I put you there on the, because you've done those behaviors, I've now put you at that level. And I found that really interesting, because it stops hierarchical relationships, and it's more level if you just genuinely thank people for helping you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it reminds me as well, there's an aspect, so there's that quite Simone de Beauvoir type thing, isn't there? There's a definite Adler, in contrast to Freud again, he was definitely more sort of holistic and social based, wasn't he? He was about like the family and friend and the broader thing, rather than just you as this sort of individual, which I like. So you've got the de Beauvoir bit of like doing stuff for others and helping others, and that helps you get out of this a bit like the status game stuff, in a way, where you're not just thinking about yourself all the time. But aligned to that, there is a line into some of Nietzsche's stuff again on self overcoming. I think that runs through it. So there's a quote I pulled out. This is not Adler. This is, it's Kashimi, and I can't remember the other author's name of The Courage to Be Disliked. Yes. So this is a quote from that, which I think aligns with Nietzsche's self-overcoming a little bit. So it's still about yourself, but it's about obviously overcoming yourself. So they said, a healthy feeling of inferiority is not something that comes from comparing oneself to others. It comes from one's comparison with one's ideal self. So it's still quite selfish and individual, as in it's not full-on de Beauvoir, willing the freedom of others. But it still takes you out of the inferiority game, doesn't it? Because it's like, right, you know, what's my, who do I want to be? What's my ideal? So I suppose it's like some of the authenticity piece that we've talked about quite a lot. And, you know, like that feeling of, when are you selling your soul a little bit? When are you genuinely being who you want to be? When are you doing stuff just because there's a bit of money in it or a bit of status in it versus like what you genuinely believe and stand for? I quite like that aspect of it, because it's still the self, but it's like, yeah, I'm not feeling, it's just me feeling inferior to who I could be or who I should have been in that moment, perhaps. Yeah. And I like that as a lens as well, rather than just like, well, don't worry about yourself, just think about everyone else. Yeah. It's like, no, who can I be? Like, what's the best? What was the best way for me to be in that situation?
Yeah.
And compare yourself to that rather than other people.
I think that's, like I say, that's a, you know, be a better version of you. Don't focus on being better than others. Be the better version of yourself. Now, that's great, again, and sounds brilliant for all the people that are that kind of person. So you're quite, although we're all aware of our thrownness and we were really helped along as kids, we know that by about 14, 15, maybe a bit more, although other people helped us, you've really made yourself what you are, John, you know, and I've kind of been a bit self-made, and that's why we do projects and books. You know, we do what we do because we're very much like, well, we can be better and let's put some action in. So we've sort of trained ourselves to be comfortable with, oh, that could be better. Oh, you know, I've not been eating well lately. I should put 2 or 3 good weeks in of good diet stuff now and, you know, get myself to be the better biological organism I could be, you know. Or, oh, my brain's gone a bit stale. I need to just read a new book to switch me back on. Or I've gone too much into theory. I need to listen to some music for a bit and go outside and have a laugh because I've gone too theory-centered, you know, whatever. So we're always aware of, like, I think this like, what makes me tick? How can I be a bit better this next week? And that can be short-term and long-term, you know, and, like, you've got your allotment going, haven't you? You're really, not a lot of people would do that. You laugh, you know, you're laughing, but plant things, grow things, there's a future, this is good for this, it's good for this. So you're very, you know, we're like that. What I think, I think that's what I mean. This Adler stuff is very much like that. But ultimately as well, he said, on the side of that, if you can get your relationships with other people reciprocal and balanced, where you grow your veg and you do all of that and blah, blah, all that stuff, but then you go and deliver that stuff out to people who need it and don't just hoard it and, you know, sell it for your own profit. And so we, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it was just like reciprocal, where you don't feel better than people because you are being nice to them and you are doing things to contribute. This was what he was talking about very close interpersonal relationships as well. Like, good friends, they just know they're there for each other. It's reciprocal. There's a lack of gameplay going on. And that's kind of like when you know you've cracked it with a mate. You still have ups and downs and so on, or even a partner. You kind of get past the silly games that, because you're confident in each other. You don't feel superior to them and you don't feel inferior to them ever. You've got that bond. So then you do things for them and it's more like, oh, thanks for that. Or that really, you know, you don't mind going over and above, because you just know it's reciprocated in not in always obvious ways, in ways that are just, you know, they're just there for you on the end of the phone, or that you just know they're there talking good about you somewhere. You just know you have that bond. So that's what I found. It is Adler was individualistic. Yeah, get on your own horse, drive, you know, get higher, push, get better, chuck all your excuses away, self-independence, your past does not equal your future. You can make any improvements you want if you can get on it and do the right kind of thinking, and that'll change your behaviours. But he was also very much about, sort out your interpersonal relationship problems. Don't do it at the cost of being superior to people. I see some fantastic sports coaches and they can't hold that middle ground. They have to be superior. They have to show off. They have to come in with some overview, wisdom, or deduction of a situation to flex the muscles and bang the chest and go, see, they won that because of my theory came true. And all you lot, you see that on Twitter a lot. It's like posturing of, you should have believed me all along. And, you know, it's like guerrilla mentality of, I'm superior. And my players doing that well, I knew I would. And then they bang the drum and go on podcasts, sell the cells, and they claim like they're this, that, and the other. I think when Adler was saying that, like, the courage to be normal, nowadays people treat normal as like some form of incapability. You can't just plod and just say things and be normal. But all the best coaches I've met and the best people I like listening to, really, they stay in that middle area. They have big successes and failures, but they never get too high or too low, and they just keep their mouths pretty shut unless someone asks them their opinion. They're like steady, and they don't feel inferior by being normal or that they're not, you know what I mean? They can hold the ground, and because they're not piling on forward with success or reputation, they still feel very good about themselves. And that is another really, was my biggest wow moment of all of this, because I work with a lot of squash players, and some players are at the top and some of them are at the bottom. And it's very hard, you know, to know why really they're at the top and the bottom. And the ones at the top that are the best are the ones that just take it in the stride, and the ones at the bottom are the same. The ones at the bottom that tend to feel inferior and poor me, and this coach doesn't like me, and I don't have enough money, and I don't have any sponsors, and I don't have this, and I, whatever, and my country doesn't produce, they're no good. And the ones at the top that start to get big-headed and ahead of the game because they've done two good tournaments, or, you know, on the trot, and then you don't see them for a year, they really see this, like, high and low game going on. One minute they're down here, the next minute they're high as a kite, and the next minute they're on the floor again. And when I work with players, I suppose what I try and do with all my players I work with, I didn't really know this, but I'm just trying to keep them normal all the time so that they don't really get to. And, like, you know, if you win the world championships, you know, you're gonna be flying for a few days, aren't you? You know, have a party. But in their being, you're not trying to escape anything through success, and there's nothing to fear by not winning. You're not inferior to anyone. You're just a person, and you're not superior if you win. And this is a bit of Camus' absurdity stuff. You know, when you recognize that things are absurd and things can happen this way or that way, when something bad happens, all the old inferiority feelings don't have to rush to the surface. And when you're superior, all the feelings of revenge and I knew I would, you know, I told you I'd do it, they don't have to become too high either. So my biggest thing from reading Adler was this, the courage to be normal, you know, and escape that need to rush to superiority or to play the inferiority card so quickly, because ultimately your relationships with other people are distrustful and you feel that you're being judged.
I've always noticed that with you when talking about people beating their chest and stuff. I've always had quite a keen sense of that, even when I was younger. Of, you know, like sometimes you're in a room or a bar or wherever, and there's just some people that they're just the alpha in that situation, aren't they?
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
And that's never bothered me. I feel I'm quite even keeled with it. I never sort of like, it's just like, oh, you observe it and you notice it. Yeah. And then you just carry on like being you. You don't really let it bother you. But I've got mates who I know, like, if you get in a situation like that and there's a clear alpha, you can feel them like prickling up straight away, like they hate it. And it's like they'll just start like backbiting them behind their back, and like they just get knifed. They've had a few beers, especially. Yeah. You know, it can even get physical where they'll start like, you know, getting in the face. And it's just like bizarre. I've always noticed that even as a teenager.
Yeah.
How that really pushes some people's buttons they don't like, yeah. Seeing that there's someone who's just, and it could be anything, it might be like looks, it might be intelligence, it might be like work achievements, it might be sporting achievements, whatever it is, there's just some things where you're like, they're the alpha dog in this room, yeah. And you just like, you notice it, and I just notice it and let it go, but other, they just can't do it, and it's like straight away you just feel the tension come in.
You're right, it could be beauty, can't it, or jealousy.
It could be on the allotment. Someone's grown like the genius expert on like apple trees and like anything. And you just like, you could feel some people like they don't like someone being clearly a level above. And it's not that that person's like you said, they're not going around publicizing it. It's just obvious they are. And it's us physically is the for blokes in it. Like if you've got like, if you walk in a room and you've say you've got like an athlete, well, it's obvious. If you've got like, maybe this is in play when you see like young lads in gyms and stuff now, and they're all on like steroids and stuff because they're just trying like, they're just trying to be as big as possible. I suppose that just goes back into that evolution type thing of just like the biggest in the jungle type stuff. But you can see it's just like, they can't handle it at all.
I think a good measurement of your own balance, shall we say, comfort within your own skin. And so you can have low moments where you do feel like, why me? Oh, but it's not there. You're not there all day, all night, all week. You can have high moments. Aren't I cool? Aren't I clever? Aren't I attractive? Aren't I brilliant? Really, I've won. I'm king of the tree. And it lasts a day, right? And it's just nice. It's like the natural ups and downs of how you feel about yourself, that life will, you know, that interconnection with life. But I always feel that, and I had this same when when Laurie and myself, you know, especially when she'd have quite big wins, you kind of knew who your friends were in success rather than when you'd failed. Because when you'd failed, it was so easy for them to come up to you and pull that, I feel sorry for your face. Yeah, oh, did you lose? Oh, unlucky, right? But when you'd won, and you'd had some genuine high, you know, they couldn't come around because they weren't genuinely happy for you. So they really couldn't, they'd be exposed with the wrong, you know, that gritted teeth, well done.
And you reckon that's coming from an inferiority player?
Yeah, they're too inferior, they're jealous. And I get that with rivalries, you know, if you genuinely don't like someone, because we weren't everybody's cup of tea. So they're genuine, why would you want to go in the company? Because you're not happy that they've won, you're just pissed off.
Yeah.
But over time, even friends, so-called friends and people around, and that's fine, I get it, they would find it hard to genuinely pull the right face when you had good news. So they'd just avoid it or catch you a few weeks later and go, oh, I saw that, well done. Saw that, yeah, well done, you did well. And that's their inferiority. It gets them too much that you've had done well. And that's their inferiority, not you showing off.
Yeah.
So you've got to be careful with that, because you can be a very hard act to follow. You can really alienate people if your life's going too well and you mention it. So you've got to be sensitive sometimes, I feel, with people, because this, you know, this is a dynamic. It's not, and you're not trying to control everybody, but or apologize for yourself too much. But it's actually good sometimes to say to people genuinely, oh, I'm not feeling good today. Oh, I know it will look, you know, like we've had success there, that went well, but you're not doing it on purpose. But sometimes you can just be balanced enough to show your weaknesses sometimes to friends and family, and you give them an opportunity to help you. I think that's when you go around like you've got your shit together all the time, and you're, you know, like when you're trying to escape your mum and dad, and you're like, oh, don't help me, I know what I'm doing, I don't need your help, you know. What are you telling me that for? You think I'm stupid? It's actually nice to...
Yeah.
Sometimes say, well, I don't know about that. I know you look. It looks like, because I'm a good football player in this and this, or I've won this and this there, I'm world champion there, or I'm a golf handicap, you know, zero, and I'm brilliant, but I'm not very good in this area. Can you help me? And you know what I mean? A lot of people can give the impression that they're superior in many ways, in all ways, but they don't mean to, but you've not, by not showing them your weaknesses. So, yeah, it was just interesting. You could, beyond that bit there, when you genuinely got people that felt inferior or a bit gritty, or they weren't in a good place, they didn't know how to react to you when you'd had quite good news. And I always felt that it was a good sign when opponents or other coaches could come up to you when you'd done well and you were having your moment, and they could genuinely look you in the eye, shake your hand and go, well done. I'm gutted we lost, but well done, because you deserve it and I've seen what you've gone through. Now, to me, that was more like respect to you, and also, oh, shit, like, you're going to come back, aren't you? Because you're together, you know, you're thinking clearly. You're not, this isn't going to hurt you or put you sulking away for 2 years. You're just going to come back. I can see you gutted because you've just, but you've got the...
Oh, that's back to the compensation piece, isn't it? That's like the nice level of inferiority where it's like, you've just won. I wanted to win that. and now I'm going to train harder, I'm going to do this, I'm going to come up with other strategies because I want to get above you. But it doesn't mean you're not pleased with them, but that's the healthy compensation of, right, I'm going to get better within normal range. It's the overcompensation then that is the issue, isn't it?
It's normal. It's what you would call normal. Of course, it's normal that your team lost and they won and you gutted, or it's normal that you're not going to be over the moon because you just lost and they won. You're not. It's normal that you're going to be disappointed, a bit gutted, but you still can go. You're not. It's not a disaster. It's in perspective. And it's the same when you win. You know what I mean? So all that stuff of show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser and all that stuff, it's a load of rubbish. Not true. It's, you know, it hurts, but you can always say well done and congratulations to your opponent. But again, you know, that fits Adler's theories, and that's not everybody's experience. And, you know, some people could, you know, they not even believe in the inferiority-superior dynamic. Like I say, what we're doing in this podcast now, we're just filling in these gaps for the listener, aren't we, from our experience?
Well, this is why these are always, this whole thing, like the podcast, the book that we've done, no, it's just fascinating because we're making the links between them, not like, more because we enjoy doing it more than anything else, to be honest. And then if it helps a few people, it's like bonus, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you see, like drawing on, you see the threads that run through all of these thinkers and how they've nicked little bits from each other and then they've taken it on there and then they've done a bit there and then they've dropped that bit. It's just interesting just seeing, and then like we say, which is I suppose the podcast in a way, we're just pulling our own threads together from it and how we've then sort of made sense of it and see it within our daily existence and stuff. So it's, yeah, they're always just theories that we're playing around with, their ideas, their concepts that I think can help just make sense of the world.
A little funny one, because I do sports psychology and things and coach, you know, I coach the full spectrum of players and so on. Sometimes when you get amateur players, they're actually worse than the professional players in terms of self-abuse if they don't play well. Really, really take it to heart. And honestly, like, you're thinking, look, I'm looking at this and it's Division 4 and it's Northwest League and it's a Wednesday night and it's random who you're playing. And your whole week's, or definitely the day, a couple of days, going to be affected by if you happen to weirdly win this squash match or not. And you could have drawn any player, you know, so there's all sorts of things. And they go and they're nervous. And I get these, how do you stop being nervous, Danny? And I'm thinking, you're a dentist. Why would you be nervous? Play it, what, you know, but there's something there about sport that people have got this, if I lose, there's, you know, with a lot of people, there's something fundamentally wrong with me, you know, like, and that, I get that, I sometimes think, gosh, I like, were you last pick at school, you know, when something happened to you, because you're so sensitive to this, even.
A lot of these ideas from Adler go back to that childhood experience, don't they? Like, you've had something's gone on in your upbringing that has meant you've felt that you've got some kind of a limitation and you're inferior in some way. So it probably is. It does probably go all that way back.
And what I say to them sometimes, I'll be in the lesson or I'll be just at the bar or I'll be around the club. I'll say, look, I'll just tell you this. You are a crap amateur. Get that in your head. You're not professional. You're a dentist. When it comes to this game, you are crap at it and you're amateur, right? And they're a bit, they laugh or they would all, you know, I have rapport with them. So keep going forward. Just remembering how you're a crap, keep saying it. I am a crap amateur fool, right? And the thinking, what sort of positive advice is that? At first, when you say it in talks and things, people they laugh, but then they're like, no, you wouldn't really say that. And you're like, no, you actually are. Get it in your head. And what I think's happened a lot, we mentioned this in the book, don't we? With sport, and maybe this is life as well, because of socials and hyper-analysis and everyone having an opinion now about everything, it's almost as if people think they're like one small step removed from being a professional in that area. Maybe we're doing this a bit with the podcast, you know, one small step away from being a philosopher, or, you know, Gary Neville and all the analysis that goes on in sports and all the analysis in we see on sports shows. You watch so much of that, you almost think you could just jump on the bench and coach the team because you've listened to it for years. And I think with all the coaching and all the books and all the information and all the YouTube coaching videos and all this, I genuinely think people often don't realise they're just an amateur messing about. They almost think they're just close to being pro if they could just put a few more hours practising or something. Yeah. So when they lose, they're like, oh, whatever. They just absolutely... Now, that's probably always been the case throughout history, you know what I mean, with certain personalities as well. It just makes me... I think that we don't go around enough taking the mickey. You know, when it comes to inferiority and superiority, I think your friends are brilliant at knocking you back into a level position. Your mates banter you and go, shut up, who do you think you are? You're boring. Or shut up, you know. And but then when you're a bit down, they'll perk you up. They'll say, no, you're brilliant at that. You know, I think good friendships, you know, you level each other out. And I think, so therefore, my final sort of thing on it is that life, what Adler said, life is a series of dots. It's a series of moments. It doesn't have to be one stretched, ongoing narrative. You know, it was like, you can make it dots, although there will be a narrative going through. But your friends are quite good, I think, at bringing you right back into the moment and just being like, now, you know, like, you just said that rubbish joke, I'm going to slay you for it. I've just beat you at golf today. Yeah, you know, you're down there, I'm there. Mates have a really good way of kind of putting you in, or parents, or good family members, good relationships. They cement you, don't they, they ground you. Right now, children do it. And I think that's healthy in terms of not living this continuous sort of narrative of whether I'm a success or whether I'm a failure. It's like, well, life's just a series of dots. And I try and say this to players. You know, every match has a life of its own. And I know there's a bit of a narrative about your whole career going on, but every single match has a potential life of its own. And you never know what's going to happen if you can keep that mindset. It's not always connected. It can be fresh. So you see the Everton score last night in football. They win 5-1. Not one person in the country would have said they will go to Brighton and win 5-1, but it happened. Or when Liverpool beat Man U 7-0 earlier in the season. Like, things just happen. And just because last night happened, 5-1 for Everton away, everyone's predicting now that, oh, well, this will happen. It's like, well, how can you predict anything's going to happen after that last night? It's just random.
I don't know if you saw, did you see Dyche afterwards? He admitted, so the guy asked him in the interview, so what happened there? And he sort of just started laughing and he was like, well, it's that thing, isn't it? So we had a tactical plan and it worked, so you all think it was great. But if it hadn't worked,
yeah,
he'd have been saying the opposite. And he was back to the absurdity stuff. Even he was like going, yeah, we had a plan and it worked, but yeah, easily it could not have, and you'd have been asking me a totally different question. Last little bit from me, just as a contrast to the bit on, you know, we're saying people who think they're better than they are. So like a, you know, like an amateur squash player thinking, well, I'm not actually that far from being pro. One thing I've noticed recently with different people that I've been sort of coming into contact with and working with is, which I think does link into Adler's work, there's a lot of imposter syndrome going around. So you have actually got people who are actually really, really good at what they're doing, and in many ways are elite in that role, and, you know, they're like top level. But a lot of them are absolutely shitting themselves. They've really got a strong inferiority complex, and it seems to manifest in this imposter syndrome. So it's like, shit, I'm going to get found out soon. It's like, no, you actually are. You're in that role because you actually are really good at what you do in some of these organisations. Yeah. But they still have this deep inbuilt. And I wonder if that is a bit of inferiority from, like we said, childhood, that they still carry with them. And it's maybe just always there where they feel like they're constantly having to compensate, but perhaps overcompensate. And it maybe manifests in this like imposter syndrome of like, shit, they never feel quite comfortable that they've got a seat at the table. And they've earned it and they've justified it, and they're as relevant as anyone else sat around that table. And you find that a lot of them sat around the table are all thinking the same thing. They've all got this low-level imposter syndrome going on.
Well, what's interesting for me there, if you're really honest, most people have probably blagged many things. You know, everyone's a blagger, aren't they, really, in certain things. So when you get a career and you get through job interviews and you get CVs and recommendations, so you're all playing some sort of background game where you are getting bits of luck and blagging it until the moment you probably actually do something totally that you, in your self-reference, go, well, I actually did that. You know, maybe like a triathlon, and it's like, no, I had to run from there to there and swim and bike, and I did it. And maybe that's why these moments are life-changing. Maybe the imposter syndrome is the, we know we've blagged a lot of stuff and been a bit lucky, or we've cheated on this and said lied about that. And maybe, so maybe imposter syndrome's quite a good thing to a point, and until you actually then go and like nail that essay, or you write that book, and it's you know you've done it, and it kind of clears it forever. It's like, in that area now, I am not an imposter because I did that.
But these people are often the opposite of what you said. So when you've got you coming up to them going, you're shit, you're just a shit amateur.
Yeah.
These have actually got people who were above them and are like, you know, like chief executives and like, you know, like, but the people who are like running companies, yeah, and they're going, they're telling them you are amazing, like you are brilliant at what you do. And they still don't believe it. So they are delivering on what they're supposed to be. They are doing stuff that in many ways other people haven't or couldn't do, but they still have this sense of like, oh.
But that's where you would, if you were working with Adlerian with them, you would say, right, what is it that you have to do to make you believe you are worth it?
Yeah.
Right. And they might, and now for me, academically, it was getting my PhD, because one of the big things was, it was like, I want to go through all the academic rigmarole of it, even though I really didn't fancy it, to prove to myself that I am actually quite clever. Weirdly, right? At the level of, that could go back all the way to when I was, like I said to you on the text the other day, when I was first ever went to primary school and I was last in class for years for reading. I don't know if it's lingering to that, or as an August baby, so I was the youngest in the year. But sport-wise, I always knew I was top of the tree. So I never had any, I was a belief. But academically, that probably carried through to college, to, from school to college to uni. And then eventually, like, that monkey needs to come off my back, because I'm lecturing at university and I've written a book, and but I still don't quite feel that I am what you might term academic. You know, I've never really got my head around things. And that's weird, isn't it? That's why even The Wizard of Oz and these films, and it's a life perennial thing. Imposter syndrome is probably there because you have got a sneaky suspicion about yourself, because you know you've been up to stuff that no one else knows about. The question would be, what is it that I actually have to do to prove I can play golf? Okay. What is it I have to do to prove that I am worthy of managing 300 staff at this company? And that'd be a good question to, and then go about. Adler would say, right, answer that, do the work, and then it's done with, move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like a belief, isn't it? It's a belief about yourself. So, but action, something that you've actioned and done, and you think, that has passed my test for what I feel is worthy to say that. And that's why it's very personal. It's not something you can always bestow on somebody and go, no, you're brilliant. No, you know you're clever. It doesn't work like that. It's got to come from inside and your own level of proof.
There we go then. Great, great point to end for the listener. What do they need to do to prove to themselves and go and get cracked on? Go and do it now then.
Yeah. But when you do it, don't feel superior too much. And if it fails, don't go back into your mouse hole and feel inferior. Just try it again.
When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you. This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.